We're looking for alpha in the NFC North. Let's hit the opening bell. Thursday, August 29th, live from Times Square, New York City. Zach down in Florida.
In the boondocks.
We're on the precipice of NFL Week 1. We are exactly 1 week away from Ravens, Chiefs, and we're still doing division previews. This will be our last one. It's our favorite one, NFC North, the one where I have the least amount of actionable advice or information or insights, primarily because I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm a Bears fan, I guess you could say. I mostly have just been hating the Bears for the last two decades, but I'm quick to fall back in love. And then I also hate the Packers, and that's consistent. And because of that, I would say this is the division where I have the most emotional vulnerability when it comes to actually properly handicapping. And so because of that, I'm going to rely more on you, Zach, to provide
clarity,
sharp insights, if you can muster it. I know you were actually saying you're also emotionally tied into this division. Why exactly?
I don't care about this division. I don't care about these teams. I'm just a little butthurt that the Packers went on a roll last year. They were pretty bad to start the season and turned it around halfway through, got impressive down the stretch.
You shouldn't have lost money based on that phenomenon, because that was something that we were quite actively talking about, spreading propaganda on social media, how in that week 7, week 8 time range, the Packers were performing a lot better, specifically in second halves, than the broader betting populace, certainly media, were giving them credit for. And some of that turnaround second half wasn't unwarranted at all.
Yep.
In fact, it was always there, and there was signs of life, and it was just a matter of time before that started to show up meaningfully on the field.
Credit to the coaching staff figuring out what wasn't working and flipping the first half, because they were basically like the worst team in the NFL in the first quarter until they shifted gears and figured it out. And then they actually became one of the best teams. And as we saw, they scored 48 points in the divisional round versus the Cowboys, right? So they figured out a secret shift, which is interesting to me as to why a lot of teams can't figure that out ever.
They think they unlocked some sort of magic that is going to sustain itself into 2024 and thereby making Jordan Love the highest paid football player in the world, which is wild to me. And I think they're too high on their own supply. They are starting to believe that this franchise is anointed in consistently having a franchise quarterback at its disposal. We had Favre, then we handpicked Rodgers, and now we handpicked Love. Bang. This is just who we are. Pat themselves on the back. Oh, just one season? Oh, just half a season. That's all I need to see.
That's actually a great point. I mean, we could get into it. Do we want to start at the top and then go team by team, or how we want to do this?
Yeah, so let's start off by looking at how the broader community of NFL analysts in the betting community, fantasy community, broader media coming in to the season. We conducted this analysis, looked at 22 different industry analysts. We see on the screen Lions number 4, Packers number 9, Bears number 15. So three teams in the top half of the league is the expectation. So very top heavy. And then the Vikings ranked number 23. We also see the volatility bars here, which gives us a sense of how much confidence in their opinions. And we can see the volatility is pretty high for three out of these four teams. There seems to be a pretty strong consensus that the Lions are a top 5 team. And then Packers, Bears, Vikings, there's a little bit more uncertainty across the broader industry on exactly where those teams precisely fit. And I think it is funny that there is so much consensus now on the Lions being a top five team, because that was something that we were talking about quite loudly in the end of November, early December, getting laughed at that Drive Quality was a power ranking the Lions as a top five team. That was outlandish. And of course, because as usual with most handicappers, even the quote sharp ones, they're just so short-sighted. It's what have you done for me lately? And they overestimate short-term performance as a predictor for long-term performance. And anybody who's not so tied up in the data and so tied up in numbers, you should know better. And
it's hard.
Some of the sharpest people I know don't.
Well, they caught up in their feels, man. And we all do. We're all human. And that's where I think our Discord's a good place to vent and learn from each other. We had some good, robust arguments and points last year. Everyone learning something, including the sharps that took a beating when they bankrolled Brock Purdy and DeMar Hamlin. But, you know, it comes with the territory. That's why you have to have some humility and say, okay, what can I take away from last year into this year and week to week and evolve? Can you evolve with the season? If your priors are like Packers are going to struggle out the gate, Love's overhyped, and they struggle out the gate, you're getting confirmation bias. It's 7 weeks in. They're 2-5. I got it.
And then you get your face ripped off.
And then you get completely wrecked. That's all narrative. That's not dealing with the current construct of reality. And that's where you're going to find the most edges. So I do agree with this fundamentally at the top. I think I did do a sucker bet, Brett. I'm going to be honest, because honesty is the best policy. I have played Jared Goff MVP. I did this like 4 weeks ago, so I didn't get a great number in the summer, but I also didn't get the worst number today. But it's not a great bet. Klebda on Twitter, some great points. Probably should have done a little deeper dive on that before placing that bet.
Okay, so you regret it.
Yeah, it's not.
I was going to say, you're sullying your integrity like right off the bat within the first 10 minutes of the podcast. Everyone's going to stop listening to you.
It's to advise you not to, one, it's a bad number.
To be like you.
Yeah, and don't do it because it's a sucker bet. It's hyped through narrative and a great point at 12 wins last year, won the division, first time Lions, a long time, looking amazing. Where's the value, right? If he didn't win it last year with the terrible QB play across the NFL, didn't even get a single vote. It's a tall order. The Lions would have to win 14 games, get the number one seed, be the talk of the NFL the whole season. That's essentially what needs to happen.
Learn from your mistakes. You're very malleable.
Correct. Trying to be.
A student of the game. Yes. Open ears. And that's what you got to be a really good bettor. And that's another weakness of a lot of, again, some of the sharper people that we know. They're not very open to criticism. They're not open to new ideas. They have it all figured out. They know what works and they know what doesn't. And that's just not true. Otherwise, you would be printing money. You need to be open to new ideas, to innovation, to fresh ways of thinking. As we know, gambling, sports betting is an art and a science. You're not going to be able to program the answer consistently over time. You have to have an element of gut feel, a sense of timing of when something's going to potentially turn, even if the short-term evidence isn't suggesting that is going to happen. Because you take a step back and there is more than enough data, information, observable precedents of where you see sharp turns. Even if, again, there's no explicit signal telling you to do so, there rarely is. There rarely is saying, oh, hey, everything's going smoothly. It's about to turn.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need to have trader mentality of when to fade narratives, when to lean into the data, and when not to. And you can actually do this the best when you're out there building your own models, because then you can have that systematic, quantitative platform to be able to guide your decision making. But if you've built it, you should know its strengths and weaknesses, when to listen to it, when to lean into it, when to ignore it. And I think we all do a pretty good job of that here at Sportfolio Kings.
Hey, it's spot on, dude. And it speaks to what fundamentally happens, especially in the NFL. There's always different dynamics, different styles of offense. The NFL is literally evolving every year.
Plus, these are human beings playing a game. you have such limited information, and there's just so much noise into any outcome. I just am very suspicious of anyone who is very confident in their views or what's going to happen next. And even in traditional financial markets, it's when you get caught thinking that something definitely is not going to happen, and then it does happen, is when you blow up.
Yeah.
Okay, so back on track. And again, for anyone listening on the pod, definitely check us out on Twitch and YouTube, because we have a bunch of slides together and we're referencing a lot of visuals, a lot of charts. And I know if you're just listening, sometimes you don't get the full benefit of that. Trying to keep that in mind as well as we navigate and continue to move forward on the podcast. But for those who are watching, we have our NFL team wins versus expected wins, scatter plot here, highlighting the teams in the NFC North. And we can see those teams that outperformed expectations versus underperformed expectations. For the most part, this was a division that exceeded expectations across several different variables. See, from an expected wins perspective, the Packers and the Lions outperformed. But we also know there was a lot of trends within the season that substantiate that. A lot of these teams, on a net basis, outperformed expectations. The Lions were one of the teams that actually outperformed the most, even though they had some of the highest expectations. We see on the screen here, looking also at a scatter plot of these teams' ATS performance versus straight up performance. Mm-hmm. And we can see from an ATS perspective, the Lions, again, had another 70% ATS win rate. And that's with a lot of people already being excited about the Lions. And then Bears, Vikings, Packers, all within that range of net in the green when it comes to an ATS and betting perspective. Another chart we have up on here is blown leads and comebacks. There's a lot of volatility in this division as well. A lot of competitive games. And even for the teams like the Vikings and the Bears that ultimately underperformed from a win total perspective. And we'll talk a lot about this as we continue to lean into more of these teams and look back at their 2023 performance with some of our more advanced analytics, drive quality, et cetera, that they performed a lot better. The broader market really gave them credit for. We see the Vikings had 8 blown leads, Packers 7 blown leads, Bears 6 blown leads. So left a lot of potential wins off the standings. And then the other thing that really stuck out to me was when we look at one possession wins and losses from this division, the Vikings. Again, the team that underperformed the most in this division was in one possession games 14 times last year, 8 losses, just a lot of just uncanny bad luck. And also just some bonehead bad decision-making that just really stunted what could have been a really strong Minnesota Vikings team last year.
And what's interesting is around the same time, the Vikings started to get their footing. Packers got their footing and one lost their quarterback and the other did not. So once we get to the Vikings digging into how much of a loss Kirk is compared to our God, Sam Darnold.
Yes, this is the year. Now's the time. There are sufficient weapons at your disposal. There's a strong head coach, creative head coaching staff. Yep. A lot is set up for him to be able to deliver on some of that promise that me, you, our friend Dan have certainly been yapping about for years now. And
we can't back off. Yeah, we can't back off now.
There's been no reason to back off.
Sure. This is the time to lean into it. Unless you have new information that says don't do it. But let's talk about it.
Yeah, very excited for Sam Darnold to see what he can deliver this season. And then we look at the broader betting markets expectations. Expected wins is around 7.5, heavily juiced to the under. So you look at a VIG adjusted expectations, it's more like 6.9 wins. And then as we've talked about in our previous podcast, but this alts curve implied win total, looking at the full range of expected win totals from FanDuel, reverse engineering the odds and the prices of those different win totals to get a base expectation win total, and that is 6.7. So even lower than the VIG adjusted and base market price. So expectations are low for this team. It also goes to just how people are really disillusioned with someone like Sam Darnold. There's a lot of haters. And again, there's still some people on the fringe like me and you and our friend Dan who continue to hold out hope. But for the most part, a lot of people out there who think his broader talent is no longer a question. It is a known factor. And that known factor is handicapped at a meaningful negative and why this team is priced so lowly relative to many in the league.
And the question to me you got to ask is, Sam Darnold in this system with high play action rate, a lot of motion, is he going to be better than what they got out of not just Kirk Cousins, but got out of Nick Mullins, Josh Dobbs, et cetera? And I think the answer is yes. So if you go back to that period of time, the Vikings struggled with turnovers mostly, but like those quarterbacks were at times very serviceable for this style of offense, very quarterback friendly offense. Darnold, talented quarterback who does struggle throwing picks at times, making bad plays with the good plays, is in the best system with the most talent he's ever been in. And so whatever upside he should have, like, this is where he's going to hit it. If that's quarterback 14 or if it's quarterback 24, but there is upside to where Darnold, healthy all season playing, could ascend into that 10 to 14, kind of like where Baker finished last year at 10.
And that would be huge outperformance.
That would be amazing because Darnold's never won. So the market assumption is, oh, Vikings are going to suck.
Yes, I would say that. But I'm very confident in at least saying that Sam Darnold is better than the rotating quarterback carousel that the team had once Kirk Cousins went down. Correct. And even still, according to our earned drive points, the Minnesota Vikings offense was the 11th best offense in the league, earning 2 points from an EDP perspective per drive. In explosive drive rate, getting a 20 plus yard run or pass on 34% of drives. This was one of the most unlucky team when it comes to unearned EDP, which is a proxy for luck. So how many times did you go down the field, earn points, get close to scoring, and then turn the ball over, not actually realizing any of the points that you earned? The Vikings lost the most earned points, not actually being realized in the league. So we have it priced at close to 56 points they earned on the field that they didn't end up scoring. They also were the second team that lost the most EDP to turnovers. So how many times explicitly did they potentially go down the field, get into scoring position, and then turn the ball over, and therefore giving up those earned points? Justin Jefferson was hurt. Jordan Addison got hurt. T.J. Hockenson was banged up for. There was a lot of missing characters, not a lot of consistency. And even still, this offense was able to perform really well from a substantive perspective on the field. It just didn't get realized. I feel like this team could meaningfully outperform this year.
And their running game was awful last year. So Aaron Jones, that's a huge upgrade. I think Hockenson's a little bit of a, there's a reason why the Lions were willing to trade him. And it's because he's not a great athlete. He's not as athletic as your George Kittles of the world or even Kelsey. When he comes back, I wonder if Hockenson was a little bit of Kirk Cousins' safety valve. The iconic Kirk Cousins Hockenson play was, it's 3rd and 14, so let me throw it to Hockenson for 4 yards. I just wonder if this, by not having him as a crutch, if that maybe opens things up more to get the ball into playmakers' hands like Aaron Jones, like Addison, even their third receiver option, Naylor, and or obviously Jefferson. I don't see the Hockenson loss as big of a downgrade as I think probably the broader market assumes.
Yeah, I could see that angle. Aaron Jones is certainly a dynamic running back, opens up the passing game. He's cerebral, intelligent. He can stay on the field all three downs, assuming he can stay healthy and that he also hasn't lost a step. As we know, running backs can drop off in one game, certainly one off season.
Yeah, but even so, Ty Chandler, his backup, is a more efficient runner than Alexander Mattison was. So this year, if something does happen, I think Ty Chandler is at least like a serviceable enough back in this style offense to carry it enough for Jefferson to take the top off.
Yeah, and then we're also looking at the Vikings circa millions performance. The market did not like the Vikings, preferring the Vikings in any given matchup only 29% of the time. And they also couldn't time when to bet the Vikings either. They only covered just 17% of the time. In the Vikings went 7-7-3 yeah. ATS. So they went 50%, but the market only wanted to bet them less than 30%. And then even when they did bet them, it was not at the opportune time. Classic bettors. And then we look at the schedule moving forward, looking at our situation-based evaluation of the schedule, looking at over 50 different situation-based variables, both from the team and the opponent's perspective. It gives more predictive, stable insight into the challenges that the team may have to face over the course of the season, and is more relevant than trying to predict opponent strength over the course of the season. Like, how good are the Seahawks going to be week 16? Who knows? They could be a top six team. They could be a bottom six team. There's so much uncertainty that it's pointless, really, to try to forecast that and then put any meaningful weight into that forecast. Correct. These situation-based variables are facts. They're not going to change. They are what they are. And what we've done is then looked at how all these different variables come together and then see how that confluence of variables compares relative to other schedules over the course of the last 25 years. And we can see here that the Vikings schedule is a toss-up. It's average. So from a historical percentile difficulty perspective, it's at 55%. So it's just about average. They got plus 4 days of net rolling 3 week net rest. They got two road trips being defined as any consecutive back-to-back road game. And they have one cross country trip. One of the outputs of our net rolling 3 week net rest model is looking at specifically targeting games where they have a big rolling 3 week net rest advantage versus a disadvantage. And our model and research suggests this is essentially equivalent to a bye week, which is worth about a point. And they have two big positive net rest advantages, one big net rest disadvantage. Those big advantages coming week 7 at home versus the Lions and week 9 versus the Colts. And then the big negative disadvantage coming week 14 versus the Falcons.
Especially teams with good coaches, like we said at the top of the show with the Packers. These teams can change things around, especially post bye week or having an extended break or a catastrophic injury, for better and worse. Sometimes things shift so fast in the NFL. That's why it's more about riding the wave. Can you get the pulse on what this wave is going to be into the next wave and kind of anticipate that move? That's probably the best way to look at the NFL season as it develops, is do not get locked into your priors and don't forget them, but understand that your prior may be right for 4 weeks and then wrong for 2 weeks and then be right 4 weeks, right? It doesn't mean that you should throw everything out for pro or against.
Yeah, you need to remain nimble. If you can time those narrative shifts, that's when you can have that outlier 70% season, especially if you can really get a pulse on a specific handful of teams and you really bet in to those teams. Again, we've done some research on those participants in the Circa Millions contest that have won the contest or have done well and have been in the money. And many times those winners are betting like the same six teams or fading the same six teams over and over again over the course of the season. And they happened to get that pulse of those teams. And that's how, again, there's going to be a huge element of luck, no doubt about it, but you can't be afraid to do that. You're not going to have a great season picking pregame ATS by having a very stable, consistent narrative of teams, because that's not how the league works.
Yep, it's very dynamic.
So let's look at the Vikings' future. So we can see the full alt win total curve here for the Vikings going from 4.5 all the way out to 10.5. Odds to make the playoffs, plus 260.
It's a low.
It's pretty juicy. So in the division plus 850, 80-1 to win the Super Bowl. Of course, this is obviously a very competitive division.
Yeah.
A lot of injuries or unexpected things would have to happen for the Vikings to play just better than good and win the division, since you have such strong teams like the Lions, certainly, and at least the promise of a team like the Packers. And then you have a right tail scenario of potential extreme outperformance from a team like the Bears.
The bet that interests me the most right now for applying to the Vikings is, could Sam Darnold be considered for comeback player of the year?
He has, again, I think we talked about this I felt like they made explicit caveats that you can't just be terrible and then all of a sudden have a good year. And that qualifies as comeback player of the year. Again, even though I think that it should. Was Darnold injured? He certainly had an injury riddled career. So from an overarching kind of macro perspective, Sam Darnold, if he is majorly responsible for taking the Vikings to the playoffs, again, in what could ostensibly be the most difficult division in the NFL, that would put him in a really good position to be comeback player of the year.
Yeah, now that I'm looking at the list, we got to remember last year, there was a lot of QB injuries last year, and so it's a very steep field. So it's not a one-off year where, you know, Baker probably should have gotten it. You got Aaron Rodgers you're competing with. That's a tough beat.
Yeah.
You got Joe Burrow. If he's healthy, that's going to be a tough beat. Sure. You got Kirk Cousins, if he does well. And then you got Anthony Richardson, which if he puts up the fantasy god numbers that everyone thinks.
And those are all very clearly injury-based, which I know certainly makes them eligible to win.
And then above him, you got Nick Chubb if he comes back and he's back to form.
Like, I wouldn't be worried about that.
He'd have to have like an AP coming out party. But the only one that I think actually looks interesting, he's on this list, but I wouldn't have thought him to be on it, is Kyler Murray. I currently see DraftKings at plus 2,800 as of August 22nd, based on what I'm looking at.
But that's shitty odds.
Plus 2,800 for Murray? I think, but yeah, compared, I mean,
28-1.
But compared to the field, because real quick, you got Rodgers at plus 140, Burrow.
Plus 140? That's, oh my God, that's terrible.
Yeah. And then you got Burrow at plus 300, Cousins plus 500, and Anthony Richardson plus 650. Sam Darnold's only plus 1,200. So I'm just saying, if you're looking.
Value. These are all terrible odds.
Yeah, they're shit odds across the board. But if I had to pick, I think I would do Murray. Just because
I would pick Murray out of all those.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition for comeback player this year.
So loses.
And a lot of players who are like set up nicely.
Good players, like dynamic players that could blow the lid off. So
yeah,
it's a tough one. So yeah, probably going to stay away from that this year.
All right. For those who can see it on the screen, we're looking at actually visualized how the over and the under odds for the full Minnesota Vikings alt wins curves look like. And essentially the implicit observation is that anytime that we have this curve implied linear model above the FanDuel or the blue line, that there is at least some fair pricing there, if not potentially some embedded edge. What we know for sure, certainly, is if the blue line is above the green line, being above the curve implied linear model, then you are being taxed heavily by the sports book to make that
bet. Paying a premium, yep.
They're not even using fair odds to price that specific number.
Mm-hmm. I would love this model applied to all SGPs. That's my dream. Because, man, are they hosing you on some SGP.
We will definitely have, a version of that for sure.
Yeah, man, they get you good on those SGPs, man.
Oh, for sure. It's not necessarily, again, telling you where the edge is. It's like where the edge could be, but we can definitely know where the edge isn't.
Yeah.
And that's useful.
Correct. If we're looking at the over, what we're seeing, 8.5, looks like there might be a slight added value, which to me makes sense. And then under, 6.5? So I agree with that kind of premise is, the 7.5 is a little bit of a dead number to me. Either the Vikings are going to struggle, Darnold's just not the answer, and it just blows up because it's not their year, or they surprise the upside to a meaningful level. Actually, I like either or. I think you have to make a case which direction you vibe with, but it is a tough division, so that's why I'm a little hesitant to go the over, but because I've been a Sam Darnold truther, I think I would have to lean into that just for the sake of that thesis.
The over 8.5 is plus 265. That's the same as playoffs. Yeah, but why wouldn't you just bet over 8.5? Exactly. Because are they really going to make the playoffs with anything less than 8 or less than 9?
They could make it a 9, but
NFC's
pretty tough. I mean, you have all four of these teams could win 9 games or more.
That's what I'm saying, though. Based on the assumption that there's going to be a tough division, that you could potentially win 9 games and not make the playoffs. Mm. Bet that. Don't bet playoffs plus 260.
Yeah. Because they're not getting 9 wins doesn't guarantee a playoff spot, so there's no value there.
Again, you'd have to have a whole division blow up, most likely, for
which is unlikely
to win less than 9 games and make the playoffs.
Yeah, which is unlikely because then you're saying all 4 teams, all 3 teams. So
there's other ways to trade that specific scenario then.
Yep.
All right, Chicago Bears.
The Bears. Oh, the hype. The Caleb Williams hype.
Oh, so much.
All right, I got something to say. Can I say start it off? Mm-hmm. All right, so I had a little spat on Twitter with our own Eric Eager about, he got mad at me.
Recently?
This was over the summer. I think it was Eric. Apologies if it wasn't.
Different white analytics dude with glasses.
I retract my statement because I think it's important for us to understand the shift in a real time, the culture shift of this young generation, right? So when Caleb Williams had his weeping moment with his mother, some of us were commenting like, oh, like, why isn't he crying with his team? Tim Tebow would have, right? Like, why are you going to mommy? Obviously, some of us in jest, but some of it to me was actually like, why are you going to your mom instead of your team? Like, you're supposed to be about team. And thinking more about it this summer, I retract that premise simply because the team is really a business. Looking at college, players can get paid now. This whole idea of do it for the team first, it's a little bit of blowing smoke. If you go to your job, if your job said, okay, we take a bullet for the CEO, fuck no. That makes no sense. So like the reality is Caleb Williams going to his parents to have an emotional moment makes total sense, especially in today's generation, because our generation, it was all about the team and nobody got paid. And that's all we had was the team.
Because you're saying it's for show and optics.
Exactly. So
but I think it's also fine though to have issue with that.
Yeah.
And it's fine just a charade and it's theater. Yeah,
exactly. The most important people in your life in today's age is going to be your family, because businesses are businesses. College teams now are businesses. Caleb Williams is making business decisions, and that's actually smart. That's forward thinking. So this narrative that I thought I had about Caleb being immature, I actually think it's maybe the opposite. He's probably a little more mature. He's just edgy because it's different. So I've backed off my, maybe he's immature and cocky, to a little more like, maybe he's actually a little more mature and confident. That's cool. So
perhaps
back to you, Caleb Williams. I'm on your side, bud. You cried out with mama. Let's win that Bears championship and be the best Bears quarterback in the history of the franchise.
It's theater. It's look at me. It's make this about me. It's definitely make it about me. No doubt about it. I understand how
that's how I thought the wrong way. Yeah, and that's how I thought too.
No, but that is still your conclusion that he made a business decision by jump, that it wasn't any sort of raw emotional state that was in the moment. It was, I'm going to capitalize on this moment and turn this loss around and actually make it a discussion about me.
Yeah,
which is like a very LeBron James type thing to do. And people don't like LeBron James for that reason. So it's a fair criticism.
And that it is a fair criticism. But to your point, does that have any effect on LeBron James's game and ability to dominate the sport to a large degree? And does he have it to back it up? If he does, then it's a moot point. And so that's
The difference, the parallel doesn't hold when it comes to then evaluating performance. And then therefore, if it justifies that behavior with the whole LeBron James parallel, because basketball, NBA is totally different. NFL is like way more team dependent. No matter how good you are individually, you need some team support. So in any case, LeBron James, even though he's had success, he's never been a good teammate. I don't think LeBron James has ever made anybody around him better than they actually were. And which is one of the reasons why he's always tried to solicit people who are like at top of the league to try to come join him, because he knows that he's not going to enable you to be better. You better just be good as is. He needs help. He's not going to help you. You need to help him. So anyway, I don't want to go down the LeBron James tangent.
NBA.
In any case, for the Caleb Williams stuff. Is his behavior, I think, is fairly open to criticism, at least the behavior that we're talking about. The whole like painting the nails type stuff, that at least is like off the field. That is more, okay, yeah. When I was a teenager, like I would probably do the exact same thing. I have no problem with that. But the crying stuff in the stands, I feel was...
Yeah, again, like you said, it's fair criticism. I think it was just, he's a kid. Obviously, it's about him, but he also understands the dynamic that USC doesn't really give a crap about him anyways. He's a cash cow. So what are we seeing here? Expected wins, 8.5, VIG adjusted 9.2. Are we thinking this is a little high? How are you feeling about this?
That's way high. So there's so much...
In a tough division,
name
too.
Brand recognition, just what we've seen time and time again of a team being very hyped up. And you can see it in the VIG adjusted number. The win total is 8.5. And it's so heavily juiced to the over that, again, the VIG adjusted number is more like 9.2. Alt's curve implied is 9 wins. And I've already previewed it, and what we'll get to in a couple of slides is the Alt's futures curve. And there's no value across the whole thing. You're being taken advantage of no matter what number you're essentially betting.
Real quick, frame of reference. So Caleb Williams is a bit of an unknown, like Sam Darnold in his new situation, right? Like to a degree. From a team composition perspective and coaching, how much better are the Bears 2 games better than the Vikings? Or is that like entirely based on Caleb Williams, the assumption that he is great already, and that's why the Bears have a 9 implied win total? So is the discrepancy of 2 full games Sam Darnold versus Caleb Williams? Yeah, games. That's what I'm saying.
Look
but
at
we
those
don't
big adjusted numbers. It's essentially 9 to 6.5. So that's a big.
Seems like these teams. To me, it seems like it's hype and narrative, right? The hype and narrative around Caleb Williams is why, because how different are the Bears from last year? Obviously, they got a good rookie receiver. They got Keenan Allen. What's changed? The defense is strong, but how good is this team if they didn't have Caleb Williams? If this was Justin Fields' team still, is this a 6.5?
That's a good question. Essentially, like, how much is the Caleb Williams effect worth?
Yeah, so let's reverse real quick. They don't draft Caleb Williams. They keep Justin Fields. Where do you think the Bears would be? Would they be at 6.5, 7.5? Probably?
Probably. Fields? Yeah, I think so. I think they'd be priced, like, close to the Vikings.
Okay.
And that means it's a good way to think about it, too, because then you're essentially saying a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
With a lot of question marks, is essentially being priced at 2.5 wins. Maybe the Bears defense is better than the Vikings defense, and there's certainly other elements. Yeah. So you couldn't necessarily attribute the full 2.5 win gap to Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
But you're saying essentially everything else equal, just Caleb Williams, no Caleb Williams, just Justin Fields. Yeah, I would say they're probably priced like the Vikings.
What I like about this Bears team is with Caleb Williams from initially is I think they're going to be much more consistently competitive, but it doesn't mean they're going to win 9 games. So I'm going to fade the Bears on like macros, but I think I'm probably going to lean into the micro of backing them consistently in good spots, because I think they're going to have a lot of edge, like being close, but just coming up short. Almost like the first year Burrow was the quarterback for the Bengals. And the assumption was they were still going to suck, but Burrow gave them a bump up. But like, they were very competitive. They were in like tons of games that you're like, oh, they're better than everyone thinks. And next year they, I think, went to the Super Bowl.
So another proxy is you can look at some of the week 1, week 2, week 3, some of the look ahead spreads to see also how some of these teams are being priced. And you can quantify some of the expectations for these teams beyond just win total futures. And I think one of my favorite week 1 bets, as a little bit of a preview here, is Titans
plus 4.5?
4.5.
That's crazy.
That
why
is
so
giving
high?
The Bears way too much credit.
First game?
Way too much credit. And it's not even like the Titans are a team that's clearly imploding or otherwise like giving up on the season. There is way too much optimism priced into the Bears.
Levis has an explosive arm. You got Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, a lot of speed, can catch out of the backfield. You have Calvin Ridley, who's still a top receiver, with Tyler Boyd and Hopkins, whether he plays or not. So
I like Titans alts. Titans are going to win.
When you said it in the Discord, I was like, interesting. I didn't really think more about it. But now that we're talking out loud through the Bears, makes a lot of sense. And actually, Ron and Las Vegas Chris brought this up, and I agree with them, is we can't overemphasize the results of what happens in week one, good or bad. So whatever you bet week one,
sometimes unless you lose by 40, like the Giants did.
Yeah, but like it's but even then,
it doesn't mean they're unbettable. It doesn't mean they're unbettable.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like
Giants went like 10-7 ATS in the Circa Millions.
If you're going to bet either side, for instance, and you have your priors and you're like, this is what I think about this team. What you don't want to happen is because you bet them and it's the first week and let's say you're wrong, you lose that bet. Then in the next week, your butt hurt because it's the reminder of, ooh, I can lose. So it's almost like a warning to yourself. You may win, but you may lose a couple bets, obviously. Don't change your perception on a team because of week one. Like, it's
for sure.
If Titans got blown out, this is my point. We bet them all. It's four. They suck. They were terrible. Will Levis threw three picks. Whatever. They may actually still be the exact same team that we're talking about right now in 3 weeks. Just take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah, that's applicable to all matchups. And that's actually something that I have wanted to add to our very long list of research topics, but is not just the butthurt phenomenon of betting from week one to week two. Like, how do you overreact and adjust all your priors based off a single games? But then the boomerang effect of what happens in week two. Then all of a sudden, it's like, you thought your priors weren't confirmed week one, but then they do get confirmed week two. And now you're like, actually, yeah, I was right. I want to add to our research. But anyway, so from an EDP perspective for the Bears, just look back on 2023. They had that big turnaround from the defense midseason. From an EDP perspective, was a top five defense.
Wow.
And a relatively bad offense, not as bad as some would probably suspect. 19th in EDP, 1.7 points per drive, but not very explosive. Pretty much all their explosion came from any sort of random Justin Fields rushing game. But otherwise, we're 24th in explosive drive rate. From an unearned EDP perspective, they're actually one of the luckier teams in the league. So not a lot. Looking at some of those advanced analytics, it would necessarily suggest, oh, the Bears performed better than they actually did on the field last season. They were what you saw. We know that defensive performances from season to season is not very stable. So it's very difficult to say with confidence that this is going to be a top five defense again. The one thing that I would say is at least an element of rhyme and reason behind the Bears turnaround was Matt Eberflus, who is a defensive coach, took over the defense midseason. And then they obviously traded for like Montez Sweat and made some other changes, got a little bit healthier. And so those things also contributed. But I think the defensive philosophy change also was quite meaningful. And so hopefully that kind of stays intact this season. One of the reasons why you were saying if the team had Justin Fields rather than Caleb Williams, and they were priced 2.5 games lower than they were today, I would probably buy that because I actually am optimistic about the Shane Waldron effect. And I think that is a meaningful improvement season over season when it comes to the Bears having a creative, aggressive, offensive-minded coach orchestrating.
And in a perfect world, let me ask you this question. Based on this first week matchup, do you prefer early hype on the Titans if they win this game convincingly? Or do you prefer the Bears losing and taking the wind out of the sails of this team being like, we're back to the Justin Fields era, like Cale gets sacked six times, throws two picks, they lose by 10. Lean into which direction? Do you have a preference if you could choose?
No, I probably wouldn't buy into really anything that happens week one.
I guess what I'm asking is if you could anticipate an overreaction, is there an overreaction you would like to see?
No, because I don't think the overreaction would be if the Bears blow out the Titans.
Okay. So you would
I feel like the whole forward-looking curve of Bears look-ahead spreads would all adjust 2 points upwards.
And that's a good point. And that's why I like this scenario of Titans winning out right here, is because I think it'll keep the Bears at a pace that's bettable. And I don't think it'll affect the Titans much at all. So you can still bet in both ways, basically. Whereas if the Bears blow them out, now the Bears are going to be so inflated, you're going to have to basically look for ways to fade them.
Yeah. So looking at the Bears Circa Millions performance last year, this does give you a little bit of a hint at how popular the Bears can be from a crowded positioning perspective. So the Bears went 10-7 ATS when it comes to circa millions. From an average spread perspective, they're about a 3.5-point underdog. They're a top 5 pick 3 times, top 10 pick 5 times, a bottom 10 pick 5 times. But this is one of the higher numbers we've seen. So how often did the circa pool prefer the Bears in any given matchup? And it was 53%. So more often than not, they liked the Bears side. But again, the timing element, terrible. 35%. But what I'm saying is this was a team, again, Justin Fields, Chicago Bears, many times a team that was like a popular pick. There was a narrative based around this team that people wanted to lean in to that narrative. Yeah. And just like this shows, is that overcrowdedness into the specific team creates a premium that is ultimately then not rewarded or otherwise properly justified. And so therefore, that's why you see a cover rate of just 35%. The pool cannot time properly a team that is well received, loved by the broader market.
Sounds about right.
From a roster changes perspective, as you mentioned, Keenan Allen, he's been in the league 11 years, a 90 Madden rating.
He's 90 years old.
From a war perspective, again, does add another plus 3 wins. So again, I don't know if that's worth a 90 Madden rating. And this is like the big kind of hubbub about Madden ratings, since they just like love name brand recognition. Yeah. And so you get like premiums there.
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift, an 85. I think that's a good ad for the Bears. Have a very strong crop of running backs at their disposal, which is good because I'd much rather have volume at running back than quality. Yeah. I feel like they have both, actually. They have both.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see from the Bears is a lot of ebbs and flows, big ups, big downs, explosive plays at times, and then can't move the ball for three quarters otherwise until Caleb gets a little more comfortable.
Yeah. From a roster losses perspective, didn't really lose much. Lost Darnell Mooney to the Falcons. Obviously, Justin Fields on the Steelers now. And then a cast and crew of otherwise forgettable names when it comes to roster transition. When we look at evaluating the schedule using our situation-based schedule variables, the Bears have the 13th hardest situation-based schedule this year. 72% difficulty perspective when it looks back, all schedules going back to 1999. 3 road trips, 1 cross-country trip, 2 big games with rest advantages. Those are week 8 versus Washington and week 14 versus the 49ers. And then 2 big rest disadvantages. Those games coming week 11 versus the Packers. That's going to be a tough one. And then there's going to be a string of games, actually week 11, 12, and 13. Packers, Vikings, Lions, all division games.
Oof.
So going to be a tough kind of middle of the season there.
It looks like the schedule gets harder on the back end. So especially if the Bears struggle early, I would be less confident backing the Bears later.
Yeah. One of the things that we've talked about as well as just the uncertainty around how good or strong any team may be is if you're going to play what we think is going to be a good team, better to play them at the end of the season. Give them like a nice long runway for things to go wrong, injuries to pile up, then just to not be the team that you thought that they were. So yeah, to your point, the Bears closed the season, Niners, Vikings, Lions, Seahawks, Packers.
Yep.
I'd much rather play that sequence of teams at the end of the season. In the beginning, they actually play some of their easier opponents.
You make a great point. And if we go back to the Saints schedule and pod, they have the opposite. They're front loaded with their tough schedule. And so the Bears under is going to be less attractive than a Saints under because of what you just said, which is the backload schedule, which so much can change, versus the front load schedule. Yeah, you're going to have to play some tough fucking teams in the first 6 weeks. So
exactly. And even as we show here too, some of those situation based variables are in their favor over the course of the first 10 weeks, which potentially amplifies the advantages in those matchups.
Okay. So we buy Bears early, we fade them late. All right. Potentially, like potentially.
It. Okay, and then from the futures perspective, just way too much premium.
Minus 105? No, not going to buy that.
Minus 105 to make the playoffs, plus 340 to win the division, 35-1 to win the Super Bowl. We're looking at the full alt wins futures curve for the Bears from 4.5 all the way out to 10.5. 4.5 is not attractive. Yeah,
not really able to do that.
I could see the 6.5.
Yeah. Six. Yeah. I don't think.
And again, like you talked about, like, and there's those situation and the schedule based elements that's in their favor. But
yeah,
premiums on this team of just the expectation is things are going to go right and that Caleb Williams is going to be an elite rookie quarterback.
If you're going under and all under, I think you're just basically betting that natural early struggles with Caleb naturally not going to be able to finish games just because of finishing in the red zone gets harder, et cetera. And then their schedule gets really tough. So if they only pick up 1 to 2 wins in the first 7 weeks, now it gets tough. Now there's nowhere to pick the victories up. So I could make the case, I think, for this team to go an all under at 6.5. Is there any value there? Curve,
no value pretty much anywhere to be seen, potentially a little bit sliver in that 6.5, 7.5 under range.
So that's always, at least we're at fair value, worst case.
Yeah, exactly. But you see this fatness, this fat premium, fat tax, fat juice on all the overs.
No, those are all over. So I got to pay a premium to go over a lesser number. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. Bears over 7.5. Oh, I'm paying premium for it. Yay.
Look at your average retail median better is the Bears are going to be good. They're definitely not going to be really bad. So like over 5.5, it's free money.
You can't, we just can't predict that. And especially historically, rookie QBs typically, them and or their teams typically don't do well, like at least from a playoff perspective.
Of course. Over 4.5 minus 3,000.
There's a world the first 7 weeks they get 2 wins and then it gets hard. So I wouldn't touch that.
All right. Let's go on to Cheeseheads.
Packers! The best quarterback in the NFL.
In history of the NFL.
In the history of the NFL. Forevermore. Better than Tom Brady already.
Consensus, industry analysts, preseason expectations, ranked number 9.
10? Oh,
what? Top 10 team. Expected wins, 9.5, VIG adjusted, and being priced, taxed to the over, VIG adjusted, 10 wins, alts curve implied, 9.8 wins.
I'm going to sell hard the Packers. I'm going to sell the shit out of them.
But see, this is where I wanted to warn the listeners, warn myself, warn you that I cannot see this team with clear eyes. I want to think that I am. And there is plenty of criticisms, but
let's start with constants. I think that's always the best place to start. They obviously have a very good head coach. Like, he's proven this. Like,
yeah,
the turnaround last year was quite impressive. Why did they realize they had to shift the entire strategy of their offense to not be conservative early and be a little more aggressive? Well,
you could, again, like, I playing devil's advocate, you can say, again, this was his first real season playing, like, you're working out kinks, you're getting things together.
And honestly, maybe that's the Caleb overview, is a little more tempering his own expectations, and it doesn't quite work. Because I was seeing, through the first 5-6 games, I was very concerned that Jordan Love was going to be a bust. That's how bad his tape was from what I was seeing.
First of all, I don't think it's actually not off the table that he still can't be.
No. Like a Tua,
yeah,
right?
He's flashed. He's flashed. Yeah. He's put consecutive strong games together. And there are other kind of advanced analytics, again, drive quality itself, that liked what it saw from the Packers.
Yeah.
But again, because I don't like the Packers, I want to ignore it.
It's not that, and I don't have a
to my own detriment.
Yeah. So for me, it's nothing about the Packers. I'm not convinced Jordan Love is him. I'm not convinced. I think this year.
That's fair.
And also remember, this was the NFL's first time seeing him. So let's say the first 7 weeks, they were sheltering him. Like, they're just like, softer strategy, take it easy, don't put too much pressure on him, roll him out slow. Then it was like, fuck that, we're losing, this is terrible, we're playing bad, let's do something else. And they fixed it. Now the NFL has seen him, right? Now there's tape, there's stuff to key on. And he did make some terrible decisions at times. We're talking Sam Darnold gets shit on for some bad decisions sometimes. I saw that in Love.
So it looked like sometimes he couldn't get the offense moving at all.
If you rewatch one game where you can see Jordan Love's downside, watch the Atlanta game earlier in the season versus Desmond Ridder. There were times in that game you could not tell the difference between those two QBs. But one other point on Jordan Love that I haven't heard anybody say is he is older and he has been around in the NFL, though this is his first time starting, because there is a world where Jordan Love is already at his peak. I think he's had a little room to grow, but how close is he to his ceiling as of today year?
That's true.
Then let's say a Caleb Williams, who's literally 22 and may take 3 years to really reach his full potential. So I don't know.
The growth rate could be less
extreme
as it otherwise would be for a 20, 21-year-old quarterback.
And that's also my theory.
Jordan Love is 25. Like, he's going to be 26 in a couple months.
Well, that's my theory.
So, I mean, obviously still very young, especially for quarterbacks these days that they can play for to 44.
Yeah.
Got another 20 years.
But it's growth from a where he is versus how far he can go in improvement. Like a Bo Nix to me is he's going to be what he is. He's not going to get that much better, but he might be a serviceable QB at mid-tier, whatever. Yeah. And that's fine for Sean Payton offense, but he become the next top five? Like probably not, because he's already at that, his own ceiling. So I just wonder about Love, as he's pretty close to his ceiling is what I'm thinking.
Can you imagine like what the odds were on Jordan Love becoming the highest paid quarterback in NFL history, like week 9 of last year?
Is there a market for that? No. So I don't know.
Well, because I don't think it was on anybody's radar that was even a plausible thing that could even happen.
I guess the reality check, is he a top 10 QB or is he 15 to 20?
Again, they're paying him like he is
top five,
going to be a top 5 quarterback for the next decade.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
On the screen, we can see how Drive Quality evaluated the Packers over the course of 2023 relative to how some market model like ESPN FPI evaluated the Packers. And we can see Drive Quality liked the Packers much more than the market did over the course of the whole season. In fact, ESPN took the whole second half of the season to race to where Drive Quality already was by week 10.
That's pretty good.
So again, that's the value in using something like Drive Quality, using EDP as an advanced analytic to complement other tools that you may have at your disposal to, again, make your bets on a week-to-week basis. From an EDP perspective, this is top 10 offense, number 8, top 20 defense, middle of the road. From an explosive drive rate perspective, I feel like that potentially would surprise some people. So 16th in explosive drive rate last season. And look at this, scripted versus off script EDP. And this goes to what you were talking about earlier, but near dead last in scripted EDP. So the earned drive points that they would accumulate over the course of the first 15 plays of a game was less than 1 point. And then off script, so how do they do kind of once they move out of those first one or two drives of the game, and then you're up to 2.2 points. EDP per drive, which is one of the best.
Yeah.
So a very sharp dichotomy there.
And that's probably also because this is over the course of the season. Like we said, the first half of the season, they were the worst team in the NFL, basically the first three drives of the game, as far as explosive scoring, all of that. So they obviously shifted gears a bit.
Yeah. When we look at how the Packers perform from a Circa Millions perspective, 7-9-1 ATS in the contest. The market, again, did not really believe in the Packers, especially over the course of the second half of the season when they did the best. In fact, the market was buying more into the Packers over the first half of the season than they were the second half of the season. They preferred the Packers in any given matchup 29% of the time, and then yikes, covered only 6% of the time.
It's pretty bad. That's like historically bad. We have no idea what this team is.
That's the definition of a contrarian indicator.
Yeah.
Packers signed Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Greg Joseph, and AJ Dillon, got hurt. So now it's certainly going to be like all of Josh Jacobs' key losses. Of course, Aaron Jones, like we talked about, to division rival the Vikings.
Which, another thing to add too, by the way, it's easy to say Love was obviously a part of the turnaround in the Packers. But if you remember watching Aaron Jones coming back healthy the last 5-6 weeks, like helped the offense dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
And was on fire. And we saw that in the playoffs too. So they're losing Aaron Jones and replacing with Josh Jacobs, I think something to key on early is how, and does Josh Jacobs fade late? There's a world where Josh Jacobs looks good early, but like the Michael Turner effect by midseason, he's done. It's over, right?
From the schedule perspective, this is the other thing. Oof. And that is undeniable. That certainly helps support the bullish argument for the Packers. From a situation-based schedule perspective, the easiest schedule. When it comes to a historical percentile difficulty perspective, just 5%. All of this situation and rest-embedded advantages for the Packers over the course of the season, starting in week 8, all the way out until essentially the last week of the season, and where there's almost no disadvantages over the course of the season. They have just one road trip, just one cross-country trip. They have 4 games where they have a meaningful rest advantage, again, where we essentially proxy it as a bye week. The model dilutes any of the positive or negative situation-based variables for week 1, because that's obviously a very unique situation. And one of the most situationally difficult games for the Packers is week 1 versus the Eagles in Brazil.
But because it's the first game, it's not situationally
exactly
painful. That's super interesting because we have precedent last year that the Packers were a very effective team coming out of a bye week, changing what needs to be changed to be better. Oh. And so having those extra advantages could potentially pay off for this team.
In fact, that is a good proxy for essentially comparing this model in conjunction with teams that potentially are well coached or well orchestrated to actually take advantage of those types of advantages. And to your point, if say the Packers are a team that can exploit those advantages to their full benefit, having so many of those in their back pocket could be potentially even more meaningful than they otherwise would be for say a team that doesn't.
Yeah.
Again, looking at those futures, you can see how much optimism is priced in the playoffs. -165.
It's too high.
The playoffs.
No, I would wait. That price is going to come down. If they struggle at all in the first half, which is more likely than the latter half, that price is going to get better. So I would have bet that now. There's no point.
18-1 to win the Super Bowl. Also very expensive for a team with a short track record of excellence.
Yeah.
With this current setup and with this current quarterback. Maybe it is real. Maybe the second half of the Packers is who they are, and they're going to have follow through in 2024. They're being priced by the market like that is going to happen.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I'm not buying it. Just not buying it.
Another proxy for the fact that there is no value betting on this team at these alt futures curves. They're just juice.
I think it's all recency bias. The second half of the season, should have beat the 49ers, 48 points versus Dallas, right? I need to see more before I go, okay, they're real.
I agree with that. There's more to be seen, more information needed.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between being short of information and betting on a team at a discount versus being limited with information and betting on a team at a premium.
Good point.
Being short of information, there's no problem with that.
That's the case.
But that's why you need to look for discounts. And now let's go on to the favorite in the division. Top 5 team now. Top 5 team, the Detroit Lions.
They've already won the Super Bowl. Yeah, here are boys. The Dan Campbell specialty. We need to talk about it real quick at the top. All right. There's some analytics disagreement around the Dan Campbell let's go for it field goal, go back up 17. The idea that I think where we miss a line on this is the vacuum of the schedule, right? Like when you're looking at how to rank a team's
schedule. What are you disagreeing with, first of all?
So the field goal attempt that wasn't taken, let's go for it on 4th-and-2 instead of basically kicking a field goal to go back up 17. Go up 3 scores.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about versus the Niners.
Yeah, versus the Niners, right? Now, I understand, okay, Niners are probably going to score against our crappy defense and all that. And even the historical analytics around these are the odds of this position on the field at this point in the game. But to me, what's lost in the shuffle is the context around the environment of this particular game in this particular moment and what's currently happening. So my position is just you want to keep pace, right? It's just what would Bill Belichick do is my like kind of thesis. And it's he's kicking the field. Why? Because he's a master at playing his position at all times. Now, it doesn't mean that the analytics are wrong. What it means is that in this high octane game and what's going on, you can't be desperate when it doesn't make sense to be desperate. So, and again, it's not that it was desperate. It's just that it shows me that Dan Campbell is a little like aggressive for aggressive sake and not necessarily yes. looking at the full context of what needs to happen when, which again, for better and worse, it's like live by the three, die by the three, right? It works when it works. And when it doesn't work, you get burned. And I think there's a little bit of that in Dan Campbell, which is my only main knock against this team. Otherwise, I've leaned into them on some futures already. I like this team a lot. Obviously, the market does too. But yeah, we can get into it.
Yeah, I think it's relatively settled amongst those who know anything is that Dan Campbell and crew is certainly being aggressive for aggressive sake,
yeah.
like you mentioned. I think there is a subset of some who still believe that means he's analytically savvy, which that is the incorrect narrative. I think he certainly appreciates it, but it's more about analytics is cover for me to be aggressive, but I'm being aggressive not because I know any better, but because I'm a gambler and I like to take risks. I'm having fun. And I believe in my team, and I think they will be able to capitalize on this opportunity. But it's not that the math says so or the analytics say so. And there's people out there who conflate those two phenomenon.
Yep.
And that is what I would take issue.
That's a great point. Yep.
What I would also say is why I am a little bit excited about the Lions. I don't know if there's value in betting them per se. Again, 10.5 wins expected. The VIG adjusted is right there at 10.5, so fairly priced. Alts curve implied is a little bit lower than that at 10 points. So there's a little bit of fair pricing being had, at least for the Lions. I think there's a lot of people out there also just expecting some sort of reversion to the mean, especially from an ATS perspective. This team has been so well at covering spreads, so well at exceeding expectations. The market has to adjust, and they have to come back down to earth. The proxy that makes me really like the Lions is Ben Johnson, and the fact that Ben Johnson bet with his career, turning down head coaching jobs to come back as offensive coordinator for this team.
Yeah, and some good ones.
I feel like that there's like a lot of signal there. I think many of us believe Ben Johnson to be a smart person, and so I would say that he's smart, probably not just on the field when it comes to orchestrating plays and creativity and, you know, developing a great playbook. But I would imagine he's also pretty sharp when it comes to managing his own career, his own life, and making plus EV decisions there as well. And the fact that he concluded coming back to the Lions this year was plus EV.
The Lions were the upstart team. They were the overperformed team, but now they're the team that's they're ready to do it all. Can Goff get them over the big hump? He struggles when he's pressured and not blitzed. But they do still have a good offensive line. So that's generally taken care of. And he's got a good team around him. And a precedent for Goff to be good enough to get a team to the precipice of winning it all. We saw this with the Rams. So we know it's in his DNA to get the team over the hump into the big game, at least. And then obviously what we just said about Dan Campbell. But everything else is basically there to me. And also with the 49ers' recent issues, the NFC is not San Francisco's to win. I think it's the Lions to lose at this point. They should be right there to get the one seed, I think. So if they get the one seed, they're two games away from a Super Bowl. But I don't think it's smoke and mirrors.
And again, you're the context guy. You're the vibes guy. You got good timing, good gut feel. I'm going to add on top of that some quantitative support. So from a drive quality and earned drive points perspective, the Lions did phenomenal. Top 3, top 4 defense in the league. The second most explosive team from an earned EDP perspective, looking at explosive drive rate, having a 20 plus yard run or pass over 40% of the time. Now, this is where it's really interesting. They were one of the unluckiest teams last year. So they left from an unearned EDP perspective. So essentially a proxy for luck versus bad luck. They left 43 points on the field. EDP lost to turnovers. Again, one of the best / worst, however you want to look at it. They gave up 68 points due to turnovers. So again, that is essentially saying they earned a bunch of points.
Yeah.
Driving down the field in some impressive way, and then turn the ball over.
Hmm.
And so either you're going to say that those were earned turnovers, and that is likely going to be the same next season. But turnovers, and of course luck, is certainly not the types of things that are super stable and predictable season over season. And so since these were both at the extremes, if you can just get reversion to just league average, that in itself could give this team another 30, 40 points on the field. And they were already one of the most potent offenses in the league. And they didn't even reach their full potential last year when it comes to an EDP perspective. So just some insights and hints there that this Lions offense could actually be even better than they were last year. And hey, if you can get anything less than a complete dog shit defense, you're talking scary good.
I like it. I like the thesis a lot. Like the best record in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 11-5-1 in the Circa Millions last year. Market loved the Lions, preferred them in any given matchup 77% of the time, but covered only 40% of the time. So again, can't even luck in to a higher than 50% cover percentage. From a roster changes perspective, lost CJ Gardner-Johnson, Josh Reynolds, Cam Sutton, Jonah Jackson, Zach Ertz, like nothing that's going to do you any meaningful damage here. Against CJ Gardner-Johnson would have been nice to have him back. Added DJ Reader. I really like that. Has a positive WAR, 86 Madden rating, 86 Madden rating for Kevin Zeitler, offensive lineman from the Ravens, Carlton Davis from your Buccaneers.
He's not an amazing corner, but he fits the style, I think, of how the Lions like to play defense. So I think he's a very good secondary culture fit. And just from an aggression perspective, they're still probably going to give up some big plays and stuff like that. But I think they're probably going to have a little more turnover luck in their department too, just because of the style of how some of these players are.
Let's bank on it. From a schedule perspective, so is there any road bumps here? Not really. So from a situation-based schedule perspective, it's 21st, so around 11th easiest. From a historical difficulty percentile perspective, 40%. One cross-country trip, three road trips, three sequence of games where they have back-to-back road games, so notable. But otherwise, one big rest advantage, one big rest disadvantage. So relatively neutral when it comes to a situation-based schedule perspective.
And if we look at the full season, I'm just checking it out, first half or second half, might be a good way to frame it. Rematch with their two playoff opponents, Rams and Bucks. I imagine they'll win at least one of those, if not both, early in the season. And then what, Arizona, Seattle, Dallas, Minnesota, Tennessee. Again, they very easily could be 6-1, 7-1, going into Green Bay, Houston, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, where it gets probably a little tougher. And then the end of the season is mixed. So again, this team's very well could start the season 6 or 7 wins straight. And then the hype train's out of control and you're not going to get any value on them in any futures. So I still think if the value's now, if you want the Lions, based on what I'm seeing from the schedule lineup perspective early in the season. So it's more likely that get in Lions early and then pick your spots to fade them later as the season wears on.
Yeah, the speed bump could certainly be mid-season. Week 9, 10, 11, Packers, Texans, Jaguars, away at Green Bay, away at Houston, back-to-back, then come home, Jacksonville, and then away, again, Indianapolis. And they're also all going to be at a rolling negative 3-week net rest disadvantage there. So that's where your potential speed bump So if the Lions start super hot at the beginning of the season, like you talked about, that actually could potentially be a pretty decent middle ground to play a little short-term fading of the Lions.
And I think that's actually a great narrative from a culture fit and how Dan Campbell likes to operate. I mean, I think this team's going to come in super hot, firing, super pumped, excited about this opportunity, just the hype in their own building. You saw it this summer when they had the draft in Detroit, and the energy is going to be palpable.
For futures perspective, man, these playoff odds are just terrible across the board. Minus 245. I mean, as much as I love the Lions' promise this year, I'm not betting minus 245 to make the playoffs. There's so much that can go wrong. Plus 130 to win the division, 12-1 to win the Super Bowl. We can see their alts futures curve from 6.5 all the way out to 12.5, over 12.5, plus 300.
Well, I like.
Yeah. Look at the curve too and see if there's a sliver. Again, this whole division is just being juiced by the makers. And again, they're all popular teams. They all have strong narratives, except maybe for the Vikings, but certainly Packers, Bears, Lions all have strong narratives. People want to bet these teams. There's certainly a visible, exciting potential future prospects for these teams that people want to buy into. And the sports book is certainly taking advantage of that.
I like that over 12 and a half.
If there is any sliver of implied fair value, it's at the very edge of the overs.
Yeah.
So over 11 and a half. I would take over 11 and a half.
Yeah.
That's what I would go for. Plus 194.
I'm going to be bold. I'm going to go 12.
Actually, 12 and a half plus 300. That's 13 and four.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you in NFL week one. And that's closing bell.